Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Combox Live, where the game lives on. I'm Behram Kazi. You can find at Death Mango, and you can find Jared Kimber right here in this room and everywhere else. Welcome to episode one of the Long Hair Club.
Yes.
Anyway, surprise, surprise. And there's been another surprise in the world of cricket. Something extraordinary has happened, Jared. Bangladesh don't play a lot of test cricket in Australia. They haven't toured down under since 2003. First test match during the winter in Darwin. And they pull off something beyond remarkable, smashing Australia by 9 wickets in that test match to go 1-0 up. How crazy is this?
I think you kind of have to separate it into two things. I think the thumbnail that Rakshit put up, not to throw Rakshit in, but let's just throw Rakshit in, was very much along the lines of, is this the biggest upset ever? It's probably not, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think you and I know how hard it is for Asian teams to win in Australia. And that this, sometimes when you win in Australia, there's a couple of injuries to Australian players or, World Series cricket is on or whatever that may be. To beat the world number one ranked Australian team, I think most people, even with South Africa beating them in the last WTC, would say Australia is the best team in the world. There's not a lot in it, but I think they're right up there. For them to lose to Bangladesh at home is huge. But remember, Australia did lose to the West Indies.
True.
Not all that long ago at home. But that was a close match. It could have gone either way.
Exactly.
This was not a close match, right? The bookies kept thinking Australia was going to come back. And I was like, I just don't see it. Like, I don't see. I think I could have seen them getting 130 runs in front. But that was the absolute maximum. Then everything needed to go right. And they didn't even get close to that. And I just thought that Bangladesh was so much better in so many different ways all the way through the game.
I mean, I think Bangladesh outplayed Australia in every department. They outbatted them, they outbowled them, and they outfielded them because Australia made plenty of errors in the field. But what's fascinating is that everyone kept backing Australia. Even Rob Baron, he bet on Australia to defend 57 at 94-1 odds.
Oh, I mean, that's fair enough. I would take those odds as well.
Yeah. But I mean, what you said, right?
You know, they've been bowled out for 54 in a warm-up game.
Exactly.
But do you know by who?
Yeah, I don't know the player's name, but he took an 8-for.
Yeah. He's only played one first-class game before.
Okay.
Right? So you do understand where people are coming from there of like, okay, they played really well, but this could turn it anyway. Hmm. But like, so I didn't stay up to watch it. I watched it on MV Play.
Right.
And so, for those who don't know, MV Play just clips all, shout out to MV Play.
Yep.
They clip all the balls, right? So I'm going through, and when you do that, you miss some of the byplay and the tactics and everything, but you get pattern recognition, especially for someone like me, straight away. And I was just like, they are just clearly have worked this pitch out in a way that Australia haven't. And when, I think it was on day three when Head and Weatherall came out to open the batting. Does that sound right? Day three?
Yes.
Or day two?
Day three.
Yeah, day three. Yeah.
They ended day two with a lead of like 153 or 150.
Exactly.
Something like that.
So when Weatherall and Head come out and they both chop on from good balls, and I was like, they've not worked this pitch out.
Yeah.
Right? It's really clear to me that they have not worked this pitch out. And because of that, they're in this terrible situation. So that's why I was much more confident in Bangladesh. Having said that, I still get the idea of what Rob was thinking and what everyone else was thinking. A lead of maybe not 57, but a lead of 120 might have been very different. But I just thought they understood the conditions in a way that Australia did not.
Well, Test cricket has been on steroids for nearly 3 years now. So the result isn't all too surprising to me. As you said, we saw what the West Indies did at the Gabba. But the element of domination, that is a bit surprising, right? Bangladesh, they swept the rug with Australia from start to finish. They dominated all the way through, won every goddamn day out of four. And I mean, I can't even imagine what the celebrations would be like in Dhaka, Sylhet, Rangpur, Chattogram. I mean, this is Bangladesh's finest hour in test cricket, or maybe in all of cricket, because
I was wondering that too. Yeah.
They've defeated the final boss. Ask someone who supports or did support Pakistan at a certain point in time, right?
Do you think for Bangladesh, Australia is the final boss or India is?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Because I didn't put it in my piece just for, like, I could have rung up Issam and some of my other Bangladeshi friends and, some of the former players. But I was like, I wonder who is actually the better final boss. But I think from a perspective of the history of cricket, I think beating Pakistan, and Pakistan's obviously so huge because they were East Pakistan, right? Like you and I both understand the historical context there, but we also understand that Pakistan was shit at the time.
Exactly.
Right? there's something about beating Australia in Australia when Australia are good.
Yeah.
That is, I think, a bit next level.
And Australia weren't like hedging their bets at all. They went full strength, right? Nice. This is the team that they would have played in an Ashes test or versus India, in India, perhaps even maybe an extra spinner. But you get the drift. This wasn't a team where they were trying out youngsters. They played everyone available to them. And I think that really, you know, pays testament to Bangladesh's brilliance, because they looked like a team which were experienced. They looked like a team which were on the rise. And they did kind of get an assist from Pat Cummins when he wins the toss and opts to bat first on that surface in Darwin. Because I'm not sure what your reading of the surface is. I think it seemed a lot on day one. It was tough to bat on day one. And then it progressively got easier till it started to get a bit dry.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Look, to get back to the fact that Australia played their best team, I think if you look into it, the reason they played their best team was the same reason I think Pat Cummins... I haven't heard any press conferences, so apologies if I've missed something here. And even if he hasn't said this, I'd be shocked. I'm not going to... There's no reporting on this. This is based purely on my knowledge of that team. They thought they would win this test anyway. That's not them being arrogant.
Yeah.
They're an Australian team at home. They expect to win this test. Very, very fair. I think they thought, we've got a chance here to actually play on a wicket, doing a little bit, get our top order into a position where they're under a little bit of pressure. They can work their way through it and everything else. Obviously, that's backfired spectacularly. That's not the only reason they lost the game, though. They bowled 8 bowlers in the first innings. They completely lost their patience. And as I said, in the second innings, when they had plenty of chance to see what the pitch was doing, they still didn't play correctly. So it's not that it wasn't that Hassan Mahmood 6-for-1 the game. It was a lot deeper than that. But my point being is they played their best team, and then they put themselves in that position. I think they wanted their best players to be in a situation where it was tough for them. I think they wanted to get some, you know, game time into some of their batters, some game time into Nathan Lyon and everything else. I don't think they thought if they would have gone into bowl first, I'm not saying they would have rolled Bangladesh cheap, but maybe they, in their mind, they think if we roll them for 150 here, the game's over, we'll get nothing out of this.
True.
I don't know if that's true. But I just wonder if there's a part of Pat Cummins who thinks that. But the other one could just be, our batters haven't made any runs. Got a couple of seam bowlers here. The ball's going to move around. Let's see what they do. And it turned out what they do is shit.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't know if it was coming from a place of arrogance or they just got it wrong tactically. But batting first after winning the toss on that Darwin surface didn't seem to be the right call. Perhaps it was even a good toss to lose for Shanto and Bangladesh, because maybe they would have batted first, right? How would they have read those conditions? As I said, they don't really play here. All of this entire squad, Mushfiqur Rahim included, has never played a test match in Australia,
bonkers. I mean, when they started playing, he was probably about 8. Last time they played, and he's pretty old too. But I think also, when it comes down to it, Steve Smith batted fine on that wicket.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know if I've covered this anywhere, but if you're on our Discord channel, I put up some of my live notes of the Australia's innings. So I thought it was really fascinating. And I watched it on NV Play a couple of times. So, you know, watching every ball twice, it was so clear to me that Smith had a plan.
Yeah.
Right. And when the ball was out there, he would throw his bat at it. But when it was in a good position, he was really soft hands. And when it was, he had a very clear path. Head, Weatherald, Marnus, Green on in did not have a plan, right? And again, I heard Andrew McDonald try and defend his batters the other day. And it is a tough batting era. We know everyone's batting average is going to be a bit deflated. I think we have to factor that in. But they're not a plus batting lineup. They're about a par one.
Not for a while, right?
Exactly.
It's not even a new thing now.
And so you watch them in that situation and you think to yourself, okay, so what would that have been if Matt Henry was bowling, right? Because Bangladesh bowled well. They did not bowl like unplayable delivery. They didn't get a wicket to the 11th over.
I mean, if you think about it, Australia were full strength. Bangladesh weren't. No Nahid Rana. He was the one guy we were all looking forward to watch in the series, and then he's out injured. But I suppose Hassan Mahmood really stood up. He's someone who got injured early on in his career.
Yeah.
Right? And then he kind of reworks.
What was the World Cup we all got excited over? Was it the T20 World Cup in Australia? Was it a Champions Trophy or an Asian Cup? There's like one random tournament. We can't see the comments because they're so far away from the room. But Bakshit might have to put one up if someone could work it out. But there was one tournament where I remember just thinking, Jesus, this guy is incredible. You know, wobble ball, strong guy, moves it both directions with the wobble ball as well. I didn't think he was the best bowler in the first innings.
Yeah.
I thought Ebadot was incredible. I don't know how Ebadot... Was it 1-2 wickets?
It was 2 wickets. And it's remarkable, whenever they win in this part of the world, he does something. He was pretty keen that New Zealand win, right, all those years ago. I think Hassan Mahmood, what I really enjoy about him is that he understood that he needs to rework his bowling.
Yeah.
He became that sort of a bowler who will just bowl wobble ball in a channel. I'm going to nip the ball off the deck in either direction. Australia did gift him some wickets, don't get me wrong. I mean,
I think his wickets were lucky. I think in between his wickets, he was good. I just think Everdott was better. And Tasman was pretty good as well.
Yeah.
I thought Everdott was better. But what I did like about it is, I looked this up at one stage. I think he was averaging over 40 against left-handers. He did not look like a bowler who averages over 40 against left-handers, did he? He looked like someone who really knew. So
he looked like someone who had really worked out Travis Head, getting him to chop on twice.
And I've got a feeling that Issam at Crick Info wrote a piece about the fact that he's... Did he play some county cricket or did he play in England or something?
He must have played a bit of county cricket, I reckon.
I mean,
I would love to see him again because he's exactly that kind of bowler who would thrive in English conditions. At least that's what conventional wisdom suggests.
Yeah, there was something that I read. I don't know if he was on an A tour or what it was, but there was somewhere where he'd spent some time in England. He looked to me, a little bit of T20 cricket and a little bit of first class cricket. So he played for Kent by the look of this. So he looks like a guy who has probably just upskilled a little bit. I don't know who the Kent bowling coach is. I should know that. But
isn't it like right down the road?
Yeah. To be fair, Pakistan were playing around the corner from where? Where is it? Over there. That way. It's a 15-minute walk. I didn't go to a day of the game. I had vomiting children.
Mm-hmm.
And it completely ruined every plan I had for this weekend. So I think he looks like a guy who's probably just worked himself out a little bit. And I was really, really impressed. But I think the more important thing is, and someone sent me a message about this the other day, and they said, you should really talk about the fact that when teams become good in Test cricket, it's almost always on the back of seam bowling.
True. Right? And Bangladesh have had this renaissance of fast bowlers.
Yeah.
If you think about it, you know, Tuscan's been around for a while, worked with Alan Donald, worked with Sean Tate. Sean Tate's going to be getting some hate from the Darwin, you know, crowd. And Hasan Mahmood is not the first name that comes to your mind.
No.
Tuscan, Nahid Rana, there's the fizz in white ball cricket.
Yep.
You've got Shoriful.
Yep.
That guy's really impressive. Tanzeem Hassan Saqib. Hasan Mahmood, you think red ball specialist, but you don't think of him as someone who's starting every test match. I think this performance has probably bought him that sort of tag.
He's what, 26, I want to say?
Yeah, he's not that old. He did really well on that tour to Pakistan as well, by the way, when Bangladesh swept Pakistan 2-0 in Pakistan, and then they swept Pakistan 2-0 in Bangladesh. That's 4-0. And now they've kind of, you know, rocked the world, defeating Australia in Australia. But I'll give you a fun nugget.
He's 26, we've literally got his page here. He's almost 27, there you go.
Yeah. I'll give you a fun nugget. Hasan Mahmood takes 6 for 55 in 17 overs in his first bowling innings and 3 for 56 in 19 in the third innings.
Mm-hmm.
That comes out to 9 wickets for 111 runs in 36 overs. Those are the third best figures by any bowler in history who has played their first match in Australia. Like, in their first match in Australia, only Wasim Akram's done better. He did like 11 for 160 in 1990.
Yeah.
Then there's this some bloke from the 1920s whose name I've forgotten. I reckon he'd probably be English.
Yeah.
And then Hasan Mahmood is number 3. So that's elite company to be in, I suppose.
I'm trying to think. I mean, I remember Ishant Sharma bowling well in Australia, but certainly not taking a lot of wickets early on.
Also not in his first ever test on Australian soil.
No, that's what I mean. I remember him bowling well in Australia in general, but he didn't take a lot of wickets in that series. The person I'm surprised of is Frank Tyson.
Oh, okay.
But I can't remember his first test. It might have been his second test when he took all the wickets. But yeah, it's, do you know what?
But he's like a type of storm. Does he count?
So generally what happens is bowlers bowl too short in Australia, overseas bowlers. The spinners try and bowl with too much side spin.
Uh-huh.
And the quicks try and bowl too short because they get excited.
Yeah.
You know, I was at the nets when the Afghanistani team was at the WACA and they were just like, oh my God.
Yeah,
and I was like, they're going to bowl shit in this game because they're going to come in and they're going to bounce Australians and the Australians are going to be like, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it a lot, just that too far back. Go back and have a look at his lengths.
Mm.
He's not too short. Tasman was really full.
Yeah.
So they had really thought about where they wanted to bowl.
But also, you know, I expected Bangladesh to not get the length correct early on. I was going to make this point earlier, but you know, supporting Pakistan growing up, they won a test match in Australia towards the end of 1995. I was not 2 years old at that point. I'm 32 today and I've seen Bangladesh win one before Pakistan and they've played a lot less, right? And Pakistan's bowlers always struggle to find their length in Australia. It seemed like Hasan Mahmood really knew where he wants to bowl. It wasn't too full. It wasn't too short. It was right in that block hole where he is keeping the batter interested, not sure whether to play it off the front foot, go off the back foot, or play at it or not.
Yeah.
Like, I think he does drive his head mentally also at one point.
You can see with Everdott is more, the more interesting one because I'm not sure Everdott is a great controller of his length.
Hmm.
But he was bowling. In fact, him and Mahmood both bowled a couple of half volleys, right?
Yeah.
You don't see many visiting bowlers to Australia bowl half volley seam bowlers. Mm. And the reason they don't is because they pace and bounce, right? And they get obsessed with that. Whereas I do think the fact that they were over pitching actually gives you a bit of a clue in the fact they were trying to keep it fuller. Yeah. Look, I thought it was brilliant.
Hmm. I mean, look, I think essentially Bangladesh won this test match in the first innings when Hassan goes right and takes those 6 wickets. Australia bowled out for 198. And by the end of day two, Bangladesh are leading about 153, 154. At that point, you're thinking, okay, this is well beyond Australia's grasp and now they need a miracle. But they lose the test match in the first innings because Bangladesh, when they score 426, when it's a lead of 228, now you're thinking Australia need 400 plus to make this interesting. Yeah. They are valiant. They fight to score 284, but it's a target of 57. And had that been 157, this could still have ended very interestingly. But I suppose it's that day one, which they never recovered from. And it was a death by 1,000 cuts because Bangladesh made them feel for 138 overs. Imagine that.
Yeah, and I think that was part of it. And look, there's no doubt Australia lost their patience. As I said before, they used the 8 bowlers. It was really noticeable to me that when Australia did start to make runs, Bangladesh just went, no. We just stick to our game plan and we'll see how we go there.
Yeah.
And we didn't see that from Australia. Oh, I thought it was, you know, an excellent thing. I saw Usman Khawaja and a few other Australians sort of come out and go, stop saying that Australia's shit.
Mm.
Stop saying that we should beat this team easy. This team played really good cricket.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important thing to note in this. This wasn't a situation where, I mean, we argued that they got the toss wrong, right?
Yeah.
And they didn't bat well in the first innings. Bangladesh still outplayed them in the rest of the game.
True.
And that's the easy thing is you get the first innings wrong and you come back in, or at least make it close. They didn't make it close. To me, I was just so impressed by the way that they went about it. It's a Bangladesh team with maybe not as many big names. If you think about the biggest names in Bangladesh cricket, most of them are not playing.
Yeah, well, two of them have retired, but Mushfiqur Rahim is still around. I was thinking Mustafizur
as well, though, right? Like, if you think of all the people that, if you're a casual cricket fan, you know from Bangladesh, none of them have fucking played.
I suppose I've discovered so much Bangladesh cricket that I was expecting this team to do something at some point, and now they've won in Australia. But Australia did not help themselves at all. You know, batting and bowling aside, their fielding was really, really dodgy. They dropped 5 catches in that second innings of the test where Bangladesh ended up scoring 426, right? And these are big catches. Mm. Tanzeed, who scores a ton, he was dropped on 0 by Nathan Lyon. Fairly easy chance. Steve Smith drops him on 62. So he ends up scoring 101. That's 2 drop chances of someone who scored big. Then Mehdi Hasan Miraj, who really made them pay and suffer. Mm. He was dropped on 32 by Cam Green, last ball of the day. And then on 52 by Travis Head, he also scores 65. And then, did you watch the Steve Smith drop?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, you need to watch that drop on NV Play or something. It was in the deep. Tuscan was on 10 having a swing and he drops an absolute dolly, right? And to be fair to Steve Smith, he also takes a lot of catches, you know, but 5 drops, you're thinking, okay, you could have restricted this lead to 128 as opposed to 228 and then we could have had a game.
Hmm.
But Bangladesh, in comparison, they dropped Steve Smith on 2.
Yeah.
It was Tanzeed. And then they dropped, I think, Cam Green on 95. It was a return chance. It's a big difference. And Australia have been somewhat dodgy in the field, you know, take the Ashes out because England was so bad that, you know, it made Australia look really good. But when they said that this is one of the weakest Australian teams since 2010 or 11 before the Ashes, you can see why now.
Yeah, it's still, I wouldn't say fielding's a massive weakness looking at that side.
They've got Green and Webster.
But they've also changed the subcordon without Usman Khawaja there.
Yes.
It was funny. There was a lot of people who said, because I said it, I think he was a slightly above average first slip fielder, like a fine player in that position. He was probably below average everywhere else too.
Hmm.
Sorry, Uzi. But in that position, I thought he was a perfectly adequate. You take your first slip out and sometimes it does cascade a little bit. But having said that, you're talking about outfield catches there with Lyon and Smith as well. So it's not just a cordon thing.
Mm.
Again, I thought Bangladesh played so much better. I'm not massively surprised. But that again is, we're talking about professionalism, right?
Mm. Well, if you just want to talk about professionalism, look at the muted celebrations by Bangladesh towards the end.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, business as usual. We're paid to do this job and we won this test match. They didn't go crazy at all. And, you know, I don't know if you've got some of the great cricketer videos, but they were like, now we'll know their names and this, that, the other. I feel like they've done enough that you should know their names, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to defend Higo there, and I'm sure he's getting enough shit from everyone else. What I would say is Higo's getting a lot of hate, I'm sure, online, and he's a big boy and he can handle it.
Hmm.
But Higo has done nothing compared to the complete and utter disrespect that Cricket Australia has given to Bangladesh and the BCB for the longest fucking time.
They
and
it's cancelled the series at one point, didn't they?
No.
Oh, at 2 points?
Do you want me to go on? Do you want me to tell
you? Yeah, sure. Everyone would want to know.
2008. They schedule a series.
Uh-huh.
And then at the start of 2008, they went, oh shit, we put it on at the same time as the Olympics. We didn't notice the Olympics. 08 was the Beijing Olympics.
Wow.
The most famous date in the world at that point. Mm-hmm. And it took them 8 months beforehand. They went, oh, we can't do that. They scheduled that tournament for 2010, that series.
Uh-huh.
I can't even find where it was cancelled again. It just never happened. 2018 is the next one. So that's three different series that I can see that have been talked about at the very least and have disappeared. Not to mention that they didn't go to Bangladesh at one stage. They didn't send their under-19s to Bangladesh.
True. There was like an under-19 World Cup where Australia didn't even feature.
And James Sutherland, when they pulled out of the 2018 series, basically said, we will only play them when there is World Test Championships points on the line.
Wow.
Right? And what's hilarious about all that is, of course, is, as you said before, you're now in a situation where Bangladesh have won a test and some of these other Asian teams haven't won a test in Australia for a long time. And Bangladesh have now won 100% of their test matches in Australia in the last 20 years.
Yes. Well, Australia haven't defeated Bangladesh in a test series in the last 20 years.
I'm just saying.
The last one was drawn as well, right? Which Bangladesh should have won.
They must.
In Bangladesh.
Didn't they win one? Was that 24?
Yeah. I want to 2004? Say it was. No. They won when Mehdi did really well. It's always Mehdi.
Yeah.
This was 2014, 15, I want to say. They even defeated England at home in those same sort of years.
Yeah, I remember that one. I was trying to remember how many others. I mean, they beat so few, you're right.
Yeah, 26 of 17, sorry.
So, yeah. So, 2005-6. So, basically, just over 20 years, Australia has not beaten Bangladesh in a series. They might also lose this series as well, not just draw it. So, they've put themselves in a situation, but they are arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
They are disrespectful. This is not a thing that's just started now. Go back through the whole history of cricket. Mm. Australia not wanting to play New Zealand. Australia not wanting to play the Asian teams. Australia not wanting to play, you know, West Indies until they thought the West Indies were good.
Yeah.
All the way through, we could see this as a pattern, right? And then they end up in the same situation over and over again where they get embarrassed. And to go back to the Higo thing, I'm not going to have a go at Higo because I've done the history of cricket. And specifically, I did a documentary, which Channel 9 never showed, but it was about World Series cricket. And in World Series cricket, Packer made it very clear. And he said, fuck the overseas players.
Okay.
We are going to advertise. This is going to be Australia, Australia, Australia. And for 30 years on Channel 9, you know, you get ridiculous things where Ian Healy says things like, Dale Steyn is very much the James Pattinson of South Africa.
Yep.
Right? Like all these sorts of, because they don't educate anyone on who these other teams are, right? Yeah. And that's why I exist as a writer, is because of how bad it was in Australia to follow any team that was not Australian.
Mm.
It frustrated me. So I went out and learned all this stuff and I ended up becoming a writer on the back end of it, right? And what Higo is saying is basically what a lot of Australian fans will be. We just, you know, they're going up to Darwin, they're going to roll Bangladesh. We get a couple of tests in the winter. Good on us. And that's all we want. The issue is that Cricket Australia has the same fucking view and they're the fucking board. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I remember the 2018 one, but I did not know about the 2008 and 2010 one. So, I mean, look, even right now, they aren't getting the MCG or the SCG or GABA.
But I don't mind that. Like from a certain perspective of like, I mean, there's no way you could sell out 80,000 seats on day one at the MCG.
I mean, there are a lot of people who live in Bangladesh and I'm sure there's a diaspora.
No, but one day you might do that. My point is there might be a point in time when Bangladesh could do that. They're going to get, if you can sell out 60 to 70 to 80,000 people on day one at the G, you will get a test at the G. New Zealand don't get a test at the G, right?
True.
It's taken them a long time
but
to
like,
get that
they
test.
They could get a test at the Adelaide Oval.
Yeah, but the problem is that there's too much cricket, right? And that the window isn't wide enough. And Australia's had this thing of Darwin and Townsville and Mackay and Cairns, right? Yeah. And it hasn't quite worked. And Sutherland talks about it, by the way, when he cancelled the series in 2018. Mm. Although you like this, he said, the problem is that Aussie rules football and rugby is on at that time. It's like, you scheduled the fucking series. You're from fucking Melbourne. You know when the football's on, idiot. Right? And so I do think there is an James, hi if you're watching. But you know what I'm talking about. Like, it's a, don't use bullshit excuses when you know there's no reason to use a bullshit excuse, James. He's retired now. He doesn't give a shit. He's just sitting back watching Annabelle break records, right? But I think from that perspective, they haven't worked out how to make that work. I don't mind them playing smaller countries in that. The same way that I don't mind Test cricket being, it should go up to Northern Queensland and to other places and Canberra and these sorts of things. But the issue is you have to make it work. And I don't think they've made it work yet. Mm. And I don't know if they know how to make it work, which is one of the big problems with it. I think that is a small disrespect, but I think if you're just not playing, I'd rather than play them in fucking Mackay. Do you know how small Mackay is, by the way?
No.
Can we look it up?
The only Mackay I know was Clint Mackay, was it?
Yep.
Yeah. Decent cricketer.
His dad played against my dad. Have we ever talked about that?
No, we've never talked about that, but I actually thought he was quite underrated. At least versus Packistan, he was always doing bits. So
Mackay has 130,000 people.
Wow.
And Darwin, I think, has the same. I think I worked this out. Someone asked me on a wagon wheel recently. Because a really small town. Mm. But again, it's...
How many apes does Darwin have?
I'm not sure. Bored crazy apes or...
Yeah, well, it was a Darwin joke.
Yeah. Mm. I don't know how... So Mackay is, like, again, a small place, but there's more other towns around Mackay.
Mm.
I think it's great. Cricket in Australia is pretty much in major cities.
Uh-huh.
I've got no issue with getting it out to these other places, but it hasn't quite worked.
Mm.
But I don't give a shit if they play Bangladesh for the next 10 years in fucking Darwin or Mackay or Townsville or Rockhampton or Gympie.
Gympie!
You don't want to test in Gympie?
I want to test in Gympie. I want to cover a test in Gympie.
Byron Bay.
Yeah.
Geelong. No one would want to go to Geelong.
No one will go to Geelong. Anyway, I mean, disrespect aside, Bangladesh have definitely stamped their authority over here and they've demanded the whole world, in fact, to take them more seriously, not just Australia. And I mean, this is a major story, not because the result is super unlikely, because we've seen some wild shit in cricket, right? I still believe that New Zealand sweeping India and India is bigger than this in terms of upsets.
If Bangladesh win both these test matches,
then we can have a conversation.
I mean, at that point... I mean, I know it's a two-test series, not a three-test series. Yeah. I think at that point, that's bigger.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to.
Because New Zealand were World Test Champions not long before.
True.
But so anyway. I do think, you know, you have to factor that in. But yeah, just on Bangladesh, they've now beaten West Indies, Zimbabwe and Zimbabwe, Sri Lanka and Sri Lanka, Australia and Australia, Pakistan and Pakistan. It's starting to look good. And yeah. I think they had three away test wins in the first, 15 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
And two of those were when the West Indians went on strike.
Yeah. But teams just win a lot more away from home now, generally.
I think they do, but even so, yeah. I think if you took some of those old Bangladesh teams and brought them to modern day, they're not winning. Like,
yeah.
This is a team that is more set up to travel than they've ever had before.
I mean, their weakest batter right now in that top six is probably Habib al-Bashr quality, and at that point, Habib al-Bashr is the only guy who can bat.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also,
even when you look at that sort of great Shakib, Tamim, Mushfiqa, you know...
The bowling attack hasn't really formed then.
That's right? My point, right? Yeah. So... We all knew they could bat. They had some good knocks,
yeah.
Right? Tamim at Lords was an incredible inning. So I think now you look at this team and you're like, this is a team that travels.
Mm.
And, you know, I don't think I'd really thought about it before this test match, but it's a spoiler team, right? It's not going to win consistently, but at any stage, if they get the right conditions, their bowling attack can go through you and their batting is good enough to get a total to back that up.
Absolutely. For how long, we don't know, but right now it's working. Anyway, on that note, we'll be taking a short break. You guys are watching Combox Live with Jared and Behram in person. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after whatever ad Rakshit chooses to play.
I have traveled the cricketing world, and so I've collected two things, the phone numbers of random taxi drivers and overseas SIM cards. Rideshare apps have fixed the first part, and Sally is doing the second. Now, all you need is their eSIM on whatever plan works for you. You activate it and you can use it anywhere in the cricketing world. It helps you save money. It is a global solution to a global problem. Stop fiddling with tiny SIMs and get the one that does it all. Go to Sally.com Good Areas and use the code Good Areas to get an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Fly free with Sally.
Welcome back to Combox Live in person, episode one of the Long Hair Club. Jared and I are currently reviewing Bangladesh's 9-wicket victory versus Australia in Darwin. And we've spoken a lot about teams. We've spoke about Bangladesh's fast bowling as well. There are other performances from Bangladesh that deserve some credit. I think it's weird how whenever there's some big moment for Bangladesh in recent times in Test cricket, Mehdi Hasan Miraz is somewhat at the center of it.
Yeah.
He was really good in Pakistan. I remember Bangladesh were like 17 for 6 or something like that. And he put on that partnership with Litton Das. Mm. He also, you know, in some home test victories has done really, really good, exceptionally good with the ball. And over here, he does both, essentially. Now, does get a bit lucky, dropped on 32 and 52. But his 65 comes off 154 balls. Mm. That is gritty batting personified, right? He really makes Australia suffer. It's that death by a thousand cuts thing. Because every over that you're in the field after like 105 overs, maybe, you just feel it a lot more. For those of you who've played cricket, will understand exactly what I'm talking about. And then after scoring 65 off 154 and making Australia suffer, same day he comes and removes Smudger with that cotton bolt, which was the wicket, right? In that third innings, as soon as Steve Smith's gone, you're like, okay, Bangladesh now should not screw this up. They should win this test match. But he ends up with figures of 5 for 66 in 33.1 overs. So he's economical and he's incisive. And not a lot of spinners, you know, in history can boast a fifer in Australia.
No, finger spinner specifically.
Exactly. Now, maybe the condition suited him a bit over here and there was some great drift and dip in his bowling, but you still have to credit the man. It was a phenomenal performance.
Yeah, I think we know in Darwin at times, in the north of Australia and in the centre of Australia, we've seen this in Alice Springs as well, that it gets really hot and the pitches dry out and you know, it's a different climate than other parts of Australia. What I thought was interesting was the economy rate, which you mentioned. So he went at 1.98 runs and over. Yeah. Everyone else basically went threes and above.
And he bowled like four overs in the first innings.
Yeah.
So that's a long, massive workload.
And you wouldn't get many finger spinners in Australia that would go for that few runs. And I think, as you said, he keeps popping up when they win games. Mm. We had him on the Most Improved Player award. I think he might have come second or third.
Henry won it, right? Matt Henry?
Yeah, I think Matt Henry won it, but he wasn't far away. Like, we really looked at him. And we've seen him in one-day cricket do similar things before as well. But what was interesting to me, I don't know if you saw this, he played really well in the warm-up game.
I only caught the scorecard of the warm-up game.
Did he make 100? Made that up?
I think he did score 100. But, like, Bangladesh, for all their improvement, and I do think that this is a really, really decent team that they've had in Test cricket, ever. Hmm. They did also lose to Zimbabwe. And the warm-up game?
Yeah.
They defeat Australia in Australia. So there is a bit of...
That's why I said I think they're more of a spoiler team than they are a consistent team. But yeah, he made 109 not out in the first innings of that game. And so, look, I just think he's a very smart player.
Yeah.
You watch him and he's very good at adapting to whatever the conditions need him to be in that moment. And I've been a big fan for a long time. I'm not sure he'll ever be like a proper frontline all-rounder, but he's close enough that like I've got no issues with it. Do you know what I mean? Like will he ever be like a plus number seven? Probably not. But can he be a slight backup at number seven and they've got a wicketkeeper who can bat in the top six? Probably, right?
Yeah.
Then they get the all-round flexibility from him as long as they have someone to pair him with.
It's interesting, right? Because I feel like tests are his best format. He's batting like a number seven, but you know, it's far more reliable in tests, I feel, even though the averages are
identical. Yeah.
ODIs is 23.91. He does open the batting at times in ODIs.
Well, he's made two ODI 100s, which is, I think, shows you just how he probably, what's his first class batting average? It's 27.
Yeah, so it's not too far from his test batting average of 24.
I wonder if he's, how old is he now? 27, 28? Yeah, almost 29. I wonder if we'll see him become, for the next 3 years, a par batting talent.
Yeah.
And that's more than enough for them because he can bowl.
Yeah, and Test cricket, he bowls an awful lot. Like, this was a 33-plus over spell. But it's not just Mehdi. There's a youngster who did exceptionally well. I don't know how long you've been tracking Tanzeed Hasan Tamim. The first time you and I spoke of him was the 2023 ODI World Cup.
Yeah.
He was a controversial selection when they sacked Tamim last minute. Shakib and Tamim had a fight or something.
Yeah.
And then he came and he scored like a 50 or two. But I've been following him quite closely to the point where I convinced Shayan to write a piece on Bangladesh's opening batters, him and Imon, because they are like next gen. They do try to like attack.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you caught that six that he hit over extra cover or long off. That was brilliant. Even though it was Bo Webster, that was probably short of the game. Now, got a bit lucky, dropped on zero by Gazza and 62 by Smith. But this was his first ever test innings in Australia, in his second test overall. That's how he chooses to score his maiden test 100.
Yeah.
There's only one other Asian batter in history who scored a test 100 in their maiden innings in Australia. Hanif Mohammed.
Okay, he was handy.
Yeah, if he can have a Hanif Mohammed-esque career, average 42, 43 as an opening bat, that would be pretty good. But
I remember when he came in, there was high hopes for him being the new generation. Mm. Not much in talent, yeah, but in strike rate.
Strike rate and plus
and
in white ball.
And he hasn't really lived up to that, has he?
In some T20s, I've seen him go hell for leather. So he has that freak gear at times. I know the numbers don't really reflect that.
I mean,
that.
In one day cricket, I would say it's held up. He's more than a runner ball. But I think in T20 cricket, he does have some limitations. Mm. But I've liked him probably since, you know, I can't remember who it was, but someone involved in Bangladesh cricket contacted me about him and said you should keep an eye out on him. So yeah, no, I've been a fan for a while.
I do rate him, but obviously I think he hasn't come of age quite, you know, yet. He is young though. I think, what is he, like 25, I want to say? 25. So yeah, he's got time on his side and, you know.
This is almost like a podcast where we just name people's ages at this point.
Yeah, but I have high hopes from him, and I mean, his 101 was spectacular. Bagged a duck as well, but who cares? And there was one other performance from Bangladesh, which you would really want to talk about because it came from a cricketer who now has a personal legend. He's going to become like a cult hero very, very quickly because he swept Pakistan home and away in Test series as captain. And now he's won his first ever Test match that he's captain in Australia. Scored a handy knock of 84 as well. Nazmul Hussain Shunto is one of Combox and good areas, you know. Favorite sons. It's DDS, Shunto, and a bunch of other guys. Must have made you really, really proud.
No, it did. I think...
Got a really good pull shot, by the way. It's him, Pathum Nisanka, and Gavin Hodge. Those are three pull shots I'm obsessed with these days.
Yeah, it helps to be 4 foot tall. But yeah. Look, I think with someone like him, he obviously... There's a lot of issues that happened within Bangladesh cricket that weren't helping him for a long time. It was clear to me that he was very, very talented.
Yeah.
He still has some holes in his game, and I don't know if he'll ever fix those. Mm. But he's coming into his prime as a batter, so I expect the next couple of years. But he's clearly very good at bringing this team together.
Yes.
Right? And I think that might be the more important thing, you know, going ahead. You know, from my perspective, I think I want people to know that sometimes it just takes longer. And I know I took a bit of a flyer on Shanto.
Yeah. And I mean, when we started working together, he was really terrible.
He might have been averaging 5.
Yeah. Right? I mean, and then he goes through this weird peak and then he drops off again. And now he's got a bit more consistent.
Yeah. Look, he's not a perfect player, but for a team like this, in this era where it's hard to make runs, I think Shanto is a really good player. I like the way he thinks about his cricket. He tries really hard. He does a lot of things that I think are good. He also, in an era, I think the era before, the Bangladesh players weren't always as professional as they needed to be. Shanto's got some issues. I'm not sure if professionalism isn't necessarily one. And just, you know, I remember, do you remember Mahmood?
Khalid Mahmood?
No.
The all-rounder?
The bowler.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember chatting to him and he played in like franchise leagues.
Oh, no, we're talking about someone else.
No, we are talking about someone else. I just realized.
Yeah.
Mahmudullah.
Yeah, Mahmudullah, yes. The guy who aged 20 years overnight.
Yes. I remember talking to him at some random franchise thing that we were both at. And he's a real professional, right? Mm. And he was just saying that it's really hard to get people to hit the gym. It's really hard to get people to think about diet and all this. And look, this is not just an Asian cricket thing. A lot of cricketers in different countries have this, unless it's part of your culture, the way that New Zealand, Australia and South Africa have it. A lot of the other cultures just don't have it, right?
But I think they're also going through a bit of a shift, Bangladesh, because you see that their home pitches are changing.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, curating dust bowls. I think Phil Simmons is a fantastic appointment as a head coach.
Yeah.
Really calm head to have. And they've got Mushy and they had Tate and Donald.
Yeah.
I mean, they are hiring good quality people. Tony Hemming as the pitch curator who, for some weird reason, Pakistan just let go of.
We should definitely chat to him. So
yeah,
it'd be interesting to see what he would think about all this. But essentially, like that level of professionalism is something I saw in Shanto early on, and it's something that we need to see. That's the difference between one-off wins and consistency, right?
Yeah.
And in Shanto's case, he's never going to be in the art of batting too. Right?
Yeah, but maybe if there's an art of captaincy at some point. I mean, look.
Yeah, it will never be an art of captaincy.
Yeah.
No, there is. Mike Brearley's already written it. But yeah, so I do think those sorts of players are really important and nothing but respect for him for what he's achieved.
And I do think you have a point over there that, you know, he is a flawed batter at times, but he's doing well now. The more important bit is how he gets his team to rally around
him. Yeah.
They are all about him. They love this guy. And I've seen him like in the flesh as well from the press box. And, you know, Bangladesh, the spirit with which they are playing their cricket right now in Test cricket, it's something that is new. I haven't seen this before. But anyway, there were other batters, not from Bangladesh, but from Australia. We already spoke about Smudger, how he did well. And he was probably the best batter for Australia, all things considered, because 71, after like nicking the ball once or maybe not, we don't know about that. There'll be an episode specifically on Ultra Edge and Snicko at some point. But he was dropped on 2, then he nicked one on 7 and said he nicked it, but sometimes Australian players just like to fuck with the minds of opposition teams. So we don't actually know if he nicked it or not. But 71 and 44, that's what, 115 runs in the test match? That's fine. You expect that from Smudger. The guy I want to discuss is Cam Green, because now I'm really confused. We expect Cam Green to be this, you know, next generation, super genuine all-rounder. And you go to his Crick Info and you look at the numbers and you're like, yeah, no, I'm not feeling it. Is he an all-rounder? Is he a glorified bumper bowler? Because if I don't want to bounce a barrage, am I bringing him on into the attack? He can be a bit erratic. He does buy himself some time in this test match. Scores that 104, was dropped on 95, and then almost sacrifices his partner. Gets him run out when he's getting to 100. And then Rob Barrett was happy with the celebration. Rob was pretty vocal about it. He was like, you're practically 40-odd for 8, and you're celebrating like you've won the game. But we're not going to police him on that. I'm just curious, what's your take on Cam Green? Because he's not a youngster anymore. He doesn't get that pass. He's 27 years of age, and he's averaging close to 40 with the ball in test cricket, which is like about 4 or 5 runs per dismissal more than first-class cricket. So it's not like he's killing it at first-class level. And his batting average is in and around 33. Those are weak numbers for someone who is now 27, albeit gone through some spells of injury. And then he's also played like 36 or 38 test matches. So how are we looking at him? Because
you have to invest in all-rounders, and you have to accept that maybe the first half of their career, the numbers won't be very good, right? Mm-hmm. And the problem was, and if you go back, I've been spectacularly right on Cameron Green from the start. Mm-hmm. I said that he was overhyped for the player he was, and that it was going to cause him issues.
Yeah.
Telling him he was going to be the next Keith Miller was just absolutely never going to help him. Separate to that, I said that he's going to have a problem around his stumps.
Yeah.
Started with LBWs, he fixed that, and then he started getting bowled all the time.
And then, to be fair to him, he was Cam Threen for a bit in between.
Oh, that was...
Which they might still do, by the way.
He had issues well before they moved him around the order. And they moved him around the order because he wasn't making runs.
Yeah.
Right? And then his bowling was the third one, which is, you know, I talked about Everdott before not being able to control his length. I've never seen a professional bowler struggle with his length as much as Cameron Green does. Every single ball is a different length.
Yep.
I don't, it's almost like a mental tick at this point. I can't believe he doesn't, he can't put the ball in the right area. You talk about him being a bumper bowler. I would be thrilled if he was a bumper bowler because he would bowl the same length for 4 overs and go and have a spell and then come back in 2 hours and do it again.
Hmm.
He bowls Yorker, half volley, length, back of a length, bumper. And then he just switches them up randomly.
Yeah.
And so at his height with his talent, he just needs to find one length. It could be full. It could be back of a length and he'll be a pain in the ass to face. His batting, I always thought would take longer to come along. I'm not surprised. He's not quite hit peak batting age yet.
Yeah. But you see those elements, you see those germs that this guy could be a really good batter someday. I would take him any day as a top order batter in T20s. I still rate him over there.
Yeah.
He's not a really good T20 bowler because he's going at over 9 runs.
I don't think he's that good in T20 either.
As a batter, I think he definitely has a power game.
Yeah.
Although he can be very, very vulnerable versus spin. And if the wicket is turning a bit, then Cam Green is a goner. He's a walking wicket.
So his record in T20 cricket is averaging under 30, right?
Yes.
At a strike rate, 150 internationally. Domestically, it's 31 at 147, right?
Yeah.
The numbers are okay.
Yeah.
Right? But when you watch him, he doesn't seem to know what to do in each individual innings.
Hmm.
Right? In one day cricket, is probably the only time when he just gets into, he's very good at just sort of milking the bowling and occasionally playing a big shot. In test cricket, he doesn't know what to do, right? With the bat or with the ball. He doesn't know where to bowl in T20 cricket, although he's getting a lot better with his T20 bowling of recent times. I can't remember much about his one day bowling, so I'll leave that aside, but he doesn't take wickets in one day cricket.
Right? And not even in list A cricket, by the way. If you look at the bowling average in list A, it's 45 plus and ODIs, it's 41 plus. So that's not even a bowler.
This is the issue.
He's not even Darren Lehmaning it.
If you look at him in first-class cricket, he's got 83 wickets at 80, right? It's hard to get good at things when you don't do it all that often, right?
Yeah,
so what I would say is, you ask what he is, he's a player who doesn't know, he's incredibly talented, right? Like, I know he's become a joke and people make fun of him and everything else. Fucking hell, guys, he's so talented, right? But he doesn't seem to know his role definition in any format of cricket. Right.
True.
And that is the absolute worst place to be. And on top of that, he does have minor technical issues with his length, with his stumps and all these sorts of things with spin, as you said before. Right. And so it feels to me every time he goes out in the middle, he's not sure what he's supposed to be doing on that day.
Yeah.
And that is the issue. this is great, this 100, hopefully it gets him back into good form.
This 100
is not going to change everything for him.
This 100 is proof that he definitely does have that talent. And he did show, you know, a lot of fight. It's a valiant knock and you have to give him credit for it. Those 104 runs, you know, he prevents an innings defeat for Australia, essentially. But I just feel like we were all really, really high on Cam Green. And I would at least expect him to average close to 40 with a bat in Test cricket, right? It's hovering around 33, 34.
Well, they moved him to number 7, which, you know, they've given him a chance. Look, 33 in this era is not terrible.
Yeah,
right?
It's 3 Test hundreds and 61 innings. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, he doesn't know what he's doing. Mm. And until he knows what he's doing, or if he ever learns it, talent is not the issue with Cam Green. It is mentality and it is understanding his role. Compare him to Daniel Vettori and Ravindra Jadeja.
Yeah.
Right? Those are two players who are not as talented with the bat as he is. But they worked out a role.
Yeah.
And they worked out a method.
True.
And they fit themselves into that team and they made themselves S-tier versions of that player.
Yep.
Right? Cam Green is more talented than both of them with the bat and might end up averaging less with the bat, right?
Yep.
And so he just has to work out his role because he's a great all-rounder. This is the funny thing about all-rounders is they don't need to be superstars on both sides of the ball. Hmm. They just need to be handy on both sides of the ball. And they change your team so dramatically. We just talked about it with Mehedi. He doesn't need to be an international quality batter. He just needs to be close enough for a while. And he needs to be handy in the positions when he can't just rip through with his off spin. That's all he needs to be. And he changes that Bangladesh team because they can fit an extra spinner or an extra seamer on any side that they want.
True. Well, I just hope that, you know, Cam Green's career doesn't go the Mitch Marsh direction because then he ultimately just becomes a top order bat in white ball. And in test matches, like, he had a weird little fun period in between.
Yeah.
Pakistan and England were two teams that he tormented everyone else he didn't score a run against.
I would say this. I think he's a better bat and a better bowler than Mitchell Marsh. I'm not sure. But
they're both very injury prone, though.
They are. Yeah. But I think with Mitch Marsh, I think he got to a certain point in his life where he hit fuck it level and he just did what he wanted and it worked brilliantly for him. You know the story about Cam Green in the first class, at the first class game, don't you, in Australia?
No.
Where he was being interviewed by a journalist at first class cricket and he lost it with him.
Oh.
Right? This is not at a test venue or whatever. This is a guy doing a piece and I think it was on Cam Green making runs.
Okay.
And I was like, if you're having a go at a low level journalist who's actually bothered to cover first class cricket, I think it tells you that his mind is not exactly where it needs to be at the moment. And you know, he needs to get his mind straight. He needs to understand his role and he needs to stop trying to be a star. If he is a number six who averages 38, right, and he can get his bowling average down to 32 for 4 years and just play a specific role, that's a great player in any team.
All right, last thing I want to talk to you about is Australia moving forward. Now, the cartel is getting old. Even though Josh Hazlewood has
How long is this show? You always do this to me.
I do always do this to you, but
We're going to record all these shows and then he's just like, I've got 93 dot points.
It's a live show with 722 people on.
To be fair, you can't see the timer too. That was the first time we'd actually seen it.
Yeah.
I thought it was longer.
But Josh Hazlewood gets to the 300 club, 6 for 89.
We can do a whole podcast
and
about
one
this.
For 5. But the issue is that Josh Hazlewood is old.
No,
Stark
stop.
Is
I'm
going
to stop you. This is an entire podcast.
Okay.
Did you read the piece?
Oh, yeah, of course. This is a dive podcast.
So I think it's a really interesting one. I'm not too worried about them in this particular game. I thought Hazlewood was outstanding.
Yeah.
I noticed in our chat people are cooling towards Pat Cummins as a bowler. It's funny because I can't remember who it was. I think it was me and Harmy were asked who the best bowler in the world was. And I was like, well, that's Bumrah, so that's easy. Move on. And there was like, who's the second best bowler? And Harmy went with Pat Cummins. And I was like, I'm not sure it's Pat Cummins at the moment.
At Combox Augury, as we've been pretty high on Hazlewood for a while. He hasn't played much, right?
Rabada's been. He's upskilled himself, right?
But Hazlewood hasn't played Test cricket as much as he would like to because he's been injured so much recently. And now at least he has a 6 for 9 to the 300 club. But Australia, in that podcast, we will talk about how they have a lot of issues moving forward. It all might come crashing down very soon.
100%. We should do that podcast tomorrow.
Yes. All right, then. That's it for this one. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Combox Live. Yes, Jared and I are together. You're going to get a lot of fun content in the coming days. Thank you for all of your chats. Sorry we couldn't take them.
Do you guys take questions? But, I mean, I can barely read it.
The first question you read was the same.
We could probably have put it here. But if we put it here,
then we're looking on the screen. Yeah, that wouldn't have worked.
Wait a minute. Do we take questions? Daz says no.
Yeah, I mean, if you send super chats, then we probably will have to take those questions. But lots of shows coming your way. We're going to go cover Pakistan versus England from the grounds as well. So keep watching Combox. Like, share, subscribe, follow us everywhere. Spread the word. And we will see you soon enough on another one of these shows. Till then, have a good one. Take care and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Rakshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.